Welcome to A Slab of Glass. I'm Jeff Perry. Each episode, I'm joined by my co-host, Christopher Lawley, as we discuss iOS and iPad productivity.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going great, Chris. How are you?
Oh, it's another beautiful day.
What is it there, like 90?
Ugh. It's hot. I had to run the AC before we started recording because it's warm here and you're in Michigan, so I'm sure it's cold there. And
yeah, I had to run the heat today. It's a balmy 50 out today.
Oh, jeez. It's usually 50 for like an hour here and then it just jumps up to 70.
Oh my God. This is actually some of the best weather we've had in like 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh. No. Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible.
We had 3/4 of an inch of ice last weekend.
Wow. Okay. Well, believe it or not, I actually used to live in Texas, and the place I lived in Texas, the town would ice over for a whole week. And like, it was just a known thing that would happen. And like the whole town shut down for a week. And it was just like a thing. It was weird. And I know when most people think of Texas, they think of desert and stuff like that. And it's not necessarily the case, especially where I lived, which was really close to Dallas. So I understand your pain. It's not fun.
No, it's not fun at all. Enough about the weather, Chris. What are we talking about today?
So you wrote something.
I did.
You wrote a little article, and I really liked it. Do you want to tell our audience here about what you wrote?
Yeah, so on tablethabit.com, I wrote a piece about the 9 things that I've learned about going iPad only. And it was just it was a kind of a personal piece that I've been working on for a while about, you know, some of the things that I learned personally when I decided to start using my iPad as my main kind of device, my main computer, if you will. And I just wanted to share some of the things that I've learned with it and, you know, some tips that I've learned about using it and, you know, even apps that I use to get my work done. But it was the main point of it was I learned a lot about my workflow, what I want out of a device and a computer, and how I can kind of mold the iPad to do all the things that I want and the OS that I prefer.
So the thing that really caught my eye about the article and what I just feel is really interesting is it's your experience over time of just using the iPad. Mm-hmm. And with that, all the cumulative knowledge and the ideas of how to get your work done better on a device that a lot of people feel you can't get work done on. Mm-hmm. And I just think it might be kind of interesting to kind of go through some stuff and kind of talk about what you and I have both learned over this time of stuff that not necessarily will just make you magically more productive, but it will, you know, kind of help you along if you're interested in just using your iPad as your main computer, ditching the Mac, ditching a PC, like different things that will kind of help mold everything together, kind of help make everything feel like a coherent OS and kind of a coherent workflow, if you will.
Yeah, no, I like this idea a lot. I think expanding on that would be really great. And I'm interested to sort of hear some of the things that you've learned, Chris. So, you know, what's something that you've learned about using the iPad that has helped you, or, you know, something that you learned about yourself when using the iPad only?
So one of the first things for me, at least, when I started going iPad only, I sat down and I made a list of every application or every service that I used on my Mac. So photo editor, video editor, FTP client, an IDE for writing code. I made a list of all these things and then I kind of just scoured the web to find good replacements. And an excellent resource was Mac Stories, and then a bunch of other websites were there too. And now I think you and I are both kind of hoping your website and my YouTube channel are both kind of those resources as well now. And I think a lot of people out there have spent a lot of time going through the apps in the App Store. And there's a ton of apps in the App Store, but there are a handful of gems.
Yeah.
And I think those gems are really important to kind of help you track down. So my point being is if you're interested in doing this, sit down, look at your Mac, look at your PC, and really look at what you want to accomplish, what you need to accomplish by the end of your okay, I'm ready to use my iPad kind of moments. Like, so for me, once I found all those apps, I started going through them and looking at their features. And iOS, unlike the Mac, so iOS has a menu bar. So up at the top, you can click file, edit, whatever. And it'll show you all these options. And it'll have keyboard shortcuts and things in there. And there's not really anything like that on the iPad. Which, okay, fine. So one of the things I started doing was going to applications' websites, looking at any videos they've posted, any articles, and kind of reading up on how the features work. I think one of the applications that did this very well for me was Ferrite. So they have really good documentation there. So I kind of read up on that app as well. The other thing that you should do is any application you're in, you can hold down the command key on the keyboard and it'll show you a list of all the keyboard shortcuts. This is something that every time I say it, I at least hear from a couple of people that say they didn't know that this was there because it's honestly, it's not very discoverable. But if you hold down the command key, it'll tell you all the keyboard shortcuts that are within that application that you can use. And I think that's just a really handy utility. And some applications even have two pages. So if you see the little dots at the bottom, swipe through them.
And this was something that I wished developers or Apple themselves would implement more or like kind of show or explain a little bit better. Because this is just one of those features, especially as a user that uses a keyboard almost entirely with the iPad. It is something that really changes the game because it allows you to kind of find the things that are useful and the shortcuts that you can use. Because, you know, ever since I started video editing in high school, keyboard shortcuts were my best friend. And I didn't like having to use a mouse and a trackpad to kind of click and do all the things that I want. I just want to tap a few buttons and have it do it for me without having to change input devices and stuff like that. And that was just super handy to know the shortcuts and being able to have that list available at any time just by holding the command key is awesome. To kind of go back a little bit about the features and the apps and stuff that you use, I like the idea of that. Another option or an alternative thing that you could do is go and kind of clean out all the things that are on your Mac or iPad and kind of ask yourself, like, what is important for me with this app? What's important to me for this thing? Because you could try and find all these different tools and utilities and it'd be kind of like an overload. Like, I don't know about you, Chris, but I've had a time where I've just got, you know, 100 plus apps on my iPad and I don't need any of them or I only need like a small percentage of the ones that are on there because I'm not using one app to its fullest potential. So I rely on another app that kind of does the one thing that I'm not using it for. And it just, it adds and compounds to be a ton of different apps and things like that, that becomes cumbersome. And it's just something that I'm not a huge fan of. So that's an alternative thing that you could do if you are feeling like you have too many apps or something like that, is just to sort of do some house cleaning and make a list with paper and pen or however you prefer, and just really look into some of the things that are on your iPad and Mac device and see if they're important enough to warrant to keep them or to find alternatives for the iOS version.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I kind of like to do that a month or two after the big version of iOS comes out. So I think I did that last year in November after iOS 11 came out because I just had so many apps I had downloaded after iOS 11 came out. I wasn't using them. Some of them I didn't even know what they were, and I just deleted them. So that's absolutely a terrific tip.
Mm-hmm. And another thing, Chris, that I like to do with iOS that is really helpful for someone that's trying to transition is keeping things simple. And with that, I mean notifications, badges, everything that kind of falls under the notification screen, and also with device sounds and things like that. Like basically, I want my device to only make a noise or pop up a notification of some sort when it's urgent and important to me, because the one thing I realized was when I was writing with the iPad and working with the iPad as much as I was, I would be in this deep focus mode, and then I would be immediately pulled right out of it as soon as I get a message from Clash Royale of like, hey, your chest is ready to open, or, you know, some other silly app that I just allowed notifications on for just some habit, because as soon as you open up any new application, it's like, we would like to allow notifications, and you just click allow because it's just a force of habit that you have when working with computers. You just allow everything and then figure out your mistake later. So one thing that you can really do to limit the distractions and have you allow yourself to focus more with the iPad is to go into that notification setting and really kind of, again, do some house cleaning with that as well and think about the things that are important to you. I can tell you right now, like 95% of the apps I have don't allow any notifications of any kind. So the other 5% that do, when I do get notifications from people or from those apps, they're important and they're something that I should address when they come up. And that's about it.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I did when I first started using my iPad to do work on was I went in and I turned every single notification off. It didn't matter what it was for. My iPad had zero notifications on it. And this was absolutely terrific for when I was starting to work. I even turned off iMessage, like not just the notifications, but I turned off iMessage on my iPad because I didn't want, when I sat down to work on my iPad, I wanted to be able to work. I didn't want somebody sending me a message and pulling me out of that. That was my working time. My iPhone, that is where people can get a hold of me. That's my communication device. But my iPad is my place to work. And I've since kind of pulled back a little bit. I have iMessage on my iPad now, but I have very limited amount of notifications on my iPad. In fact, I can probably pull everything up right here. It's iMessage, Tweetbot, but that's for, I kind of have some reasons, Todoist, and that looks to be about it. Like, I literally do not have notifications on my iPad. Now, I do have an Apple Watch, and I have all my, you know, notifications kind of piped through that, so if that's something you do have, that's a really good place to put all your notifications, because notifications are the easiest distraction on iOS. It's the easiest thing to pull you out of something. And like you said, if you have a notification for Clash Royale telling you your chest is ready, like that's not important. That's not important to your work. Your work should be more important than that, unless, you know, maybe your work is playing Clash Royale. I don't know. But
you know me, I'm just a giant esports gamer with Clash Royale. That's how I make my living.
I figured you were. I mean, I figured you were just kind of hiding that for the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, the secret's out now. Thanks, Chris.
Sorry. But, you know, be honest with everybody, Jeff. But yeah, notifications. They're the devil in the OS. They are the thing that is going to distract you. They are the thing that will pull you out of your work, and eliminate them. If you do not need them, eliminate them.
Yeah. The apps that I've got with notifications on is my calendar app of choice, Calendars 5 by Readle, Fiery Feeds, Mail.
Oh, you have email notifications on?
Well, kind of. I have a set, like the way that I have Mail set up for notifications is don't give me any notification banners or anything like that unless they're VIPs.
Okay.
But I focus more of my stuff on badges and stuff like that. And like even then, like most of the stuff that I have notifications on for are just badges. Like my calendar app, I allow notifications to push through because I am time blocking, and that's kind of how it keeps me on track of things. With Fiery Feeds, I just have badges, so it lets me know that how many things I have left in my RSS feed. With Mail, it's usually just badges unless I get an email from my boss at work and a few other people that are on my VIP list. I will get notifications when they email me because they're usually very urgent for me to respond to. Messages, I just have badges. Things, I allow everything because that's my task manager. And if I have things that are in dire need of getting done, or things will explode, I want to be notified of it and told. And the one that is kind of a guilty pleasure for me is Twitterific. And I am still very much in Twitter, even though I am trying to limit my social media, but Twitter is just one of those things that I can never like not be a part of. And I'm always open to engaging with other people. And so everything comes through with Twitterific with all of the accounts, whether it's my personal account, the Tablet Habit account, or the A Slab of Glass account. If someone tweets at me or messages me on any of those accounts, I'll get notified. But other than that, that's about it as far as notifications go and stuff like that. Those are the only apps out of everything I have that has notifications.
That's really interesting. You have badges that you rely on badges. I absolutely can't stand badges. I turn the only applications that have badges for me are Messages and Todoist. That's it. That's the only one that gets badges for me. Everything else is either lock screen notifications or banners. So that's kind of interesting that you do that.
See, I don't like the lock screen, just as like a privacy standpoint. I know that you can kind of hide certain things from it and things. I don't know. Just for whatever reason, it irks me really wrong to have certain things in my notifications, especially on my iPad, because I'll just leave it sitting up when I walk away from my desk, whether it's here at work. And like, I don't want anybody to like power on my, like, not that I think anybody at my work will actually do that or anybody, but like, it makes me feel better about my privacy to not have people allow themselves to get access to my iPad, even through the lock screen. The reason I have badges is actually because I also hate badges. So there is a badge. It will just completely annoy me if they're there. And like, that's why I have my Fiery Feeds thing, because it has badges, because I want to be kind of constantly annoyed of the fact that there's a badge there so I can keep up with the news that I have in my RSS feed, messages and mail as well. Like, I keep those badges up, and it's just one of those things that like I have to have them cleared out before the end of the day. Otherwise I can't sleep. So that's why I use badges, is because I actually hate them as well.
That's really, really interesting. Yeah, so kind of moving on here, the next one that I kind of wanted to talk about is Type to Siri. This is something that came with iOS 11, and Federico Vitici over at Mac Stories wrote a really good article on this, and I was kind of playing around with this idea as well, is that instead of having normal Siri on your phone, so or on your iPad, that is, where you would just hold down the button and talk to it, you can hold down the button and then you can kind of use it as a command line and type. So you could type, you can hold down the button and then type play music, or you can hold down the button and say add go grocery shopping today at 2 p.m. in Todoist. And which is great about that is because things like apps like Todoist that have weird names, Siri can't get those right. So if you say Todoist to Siri when you're talking to it, it won't ever get it right. You have to say Todoist, and I refuse to say Todoist. Like, that just, it doesn't, it sounds stupid. So there's a lot of benefits there, especially if you have a third-party keyboard or something that has a Siri button on it already. So you can just hit that button and start typing. That is kind of the one thing about the smart keyboard. I see myself not using that feature as much when I'm using the smart keyboard because there is no Siri button on it. But it's a really interesting feature. I think it has a lot of benefits, especially as an iPad, because you're sitting down and using it. On my iPhone, I still have the voice Siri on there, so you can say the phrase and trigger it, so I could say it from across the room and have it turn on my bedroom lights or living room lights or whatever, and you know, that's there to work. But with my iPad, I'm sitting down in front of it, and it just makes way more sense for me to be able to hold down the button and type, you know, set a timer for 5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, and Type to Siri, especially for the iPad, just makes more sense because I always have a keyboard connected. And, mm-hmm. you know, with an iPhone, you know, it's more voice heavy, like, especially because I'm the kind of person that has to get ideas, especially like things I need to do out of my head immediately. I'll just say, you know, the trigger word and add a reminder to do this. And then it will just take the reminder and then send it over to things, because that's how I have it integrated. So that makes things really nice. The one thing I've noticed is that when I don't use the iPad with a keyboard, I do use the Siri more often than when I do have a keyboard. So you and I are in the same boat here with that. And the thing I always forget is that, oh, Type to Siri is on. So I'll press and hold the home button and Type to Siri will still be activated even when the keyboard is connected. And so I have to like type it on the virtual keyboard, which is kind of annoying. Like, I wish wish that like there was more granular settings where you could be like, if the smart keyboard is attached, use typed Siri. If it's not attached, then use the voice. Like that would be a great way for Apple to offer more granular settings and distinguish themselves as we are here for pro users. And we want to make sure that that is an option that is available of when Siri is voice activated and when Siri isn't voice activated.
To be fair, Type to Siri is an accessibility feature. It's in the accessibility option. So it's not really meant to be some pro user feature. It's just kind of, it's available. So I'm taking advantage of it. I definitely see what you're saying, and as you were saying it, I was like, oh yeah, that would be genius if there was an option of like, hey, if keyboard attached, just use Type to Siri. If there's no keyboard attached, use, you know, voice Siri. But yeah, it is an accessibility feature. I would like to see it grow more. I would like to see more options be available. But for right now, it actually works really well. And anything you can, you know, say to Siri, you can type it and it's right there. It also works really well when I'm in my office too. So I'm not like yelling at my iPad with people walking outside and like being like, okay, the new guy's crazy.
True. I always forget that it's an accessibility feature. So I do give it some sort of, I give it a pass almost, like, because there are some accessibility features that I use that aren't necessarily meant for people like you and I. Mm-hmm. Like, they're meant as a means to help people with disabilities or, you know, with ways to circumnavigate the usual user experience. So I will give it a pass just because it is part of accessibility. You know, speaking of like using search and stuff, Chris, Spotlight is one thing I wish more people would use. I don't know about you, but my fiance has a lot of things on her phone where she has like 4 or 5 pages of just all of her apps in like no singular folder or organization. It drives me bananas.
Oh no.
And the worst part is when she gives me her phone and asks me to do something, like when she's driving or like if we're trying to find a movie to watch on Netflix or something like that, she's like, hey, just pick something that you want to watch. And I always have to like, A, get over my anxiety that I'm dealing with her phone, because it's so much, Chris. There's so much there. And then I have to use Spotlight to search for it. And the one thing I wish more people would do is use Spotlight as a means to search for the things that they don't want to eat, that they either know that they have but don't know where it is, or like if they used a lot of folders and stuff like that. That's just something that I think more people should use. And Spotlight isn't just great for searching apps. It's great for searching for files, news, if you allow it, a bunch of other things that you can kind of find through Spotlight. And I wish more people would use it for those things. I mean, is there anything that you use Spotlight specifically for, Chris, that you wish more people would use?
I use Spotlight for everything. I started using, when I became a Mac user and I found out about Spotlight and just hitting that command space, almost said command tab. When you hit just command space and you can just start typing what you want. So like my big thing was command space, Final Cut Pro, command space, motion, command space. Like it was fundamental to the way I learned how to navigate through the Mac. And that was huge for me. And then iOS 9, when it was just search before, and then I believe in iOS 9, that's when it kind of got rebranded to Spotlight, because that's when you got the ability to search for files, search for, you know, for individual emails, and it just got better granular controls. It got better options to search not just for applications, but for stuff within apps. You can search for songs. It's just so much better now. So anytime I need something, I just command space, type what I'm looking for, and it's usually right there. Now you can go through, so if you have like third-party apps that you keep seeing showing up in Spotlight that you just don't want them to be there, you can go through and in settings go to, you know, scroll to the bottom where all the third-party apps are, and you can go into Siri and search, and you can turn that off, and that'll disable it from Spotlight and from Siri, so like it won't show up there. So if you're like testing another, you know, to task manager or note-taking app or something like that, you can go in and turn a previous one off, so you're not seeing those duplicate options in there.
Right, yeah. And that's one thing that I strongly suggest if someone that wants to use Spotlight more is if you're seeing things that you don't want, you can turn them off for the most part. There are some things that you might not be able to or whatever, but you know, Siri and Spotlight is really nice of being able to have those granular controls and stuff like that. So I think that is something I really push on people that are trying to use iOS more.
Yeah, absolutely. The next thing that I think we should kind of tackle is drag and drop. This is something we got in iOS 11, and it's been mixed. I've actually heard from some people that said they don't like drag and drop, that it's too cumbersome, that when they pick a file, they don't like that they have to go hunt for the other app. And I kind of understand where they're coming from. It makes sense. So I kind of want to talk about how I use drag and drop, and then you can chime in as well. So if I have an application open, let's say I have Photos open, and I have three photos I want to move. Okay, so first, originally what I could have done is I could have hit the select button, tapped on each three of those photos, hit the share sheet, and move them to whatever application I want. That would have worked, but say I wanted to put them inside a document. I didn't want to just, you know, drop them in. I want to put them inside the Pages document. I don't want to just, you know, just move them to an application. So I could select those three photos, that is, start the drag, and then what I'll do is I'll hit Command Space, bring up Spotlight. Like I said, Spotlight should be your best friend. Hit Command Space, type in Pages, and then you can tap Pages and you can drop them right in there. Or what you could do is you can hit Command, before you start dragging and dropping anything, you can hit Command Space, type in Pages, the Pages icon will show up, you can drag and drop the Pages icon, put that in split view, and then you can move the photos back and forth. So drag and drop, it does take a minute to kind of get a handle of. And I think the best way of kind of really starting to learn how to use drag and drop is using a shelf app. Personally, I use Yoink. Yoink is my favorite shelf app. It has a lot of cool features. One of my favorite features is it has an option called Stacks. So if, like I said, I had three photos, and if I dropped them in Yoink, it'll take those three photos and stack them on top of each other. And I guess I should back up for a second and explain what a shelf app is. So if you have a Windows PC or a Mac, you have the desktop. And the desktop is not meant to be a permanent file storage place. The desktop originally was kind of a hack. I don't want to get into it. That's all computer history. But the desktop is meant to just be a temporary place that you can store files. Now, a lot of people, and I work in IT, I see this all day long, a lot of people use the desktop as their final resting place for files, and that's not where it should be. So shelf apps are the idea for iOS that this is your quote-unquote desktop. This is a place to store files temporarily. This is not meant to be their final place. This is not meant to be where they're going to live forever. This is, hey, I'm working on this project. So say I'm working on a video, and I have some photos, some video clips, and some audio clips I know I'm going to need to be working on. So what I can do is I can open up Yoink, and what I'll do is I'll open it up and slide over. So it won't even be on one side of the screen. I'll just put it up. So I'll start the drag, put Yoink up and slide over, drop those files right there. And then when I need them, I can bring Yoink back up and pull them right out of Yoink. So it's a really interesting idea. Yoink is the one I use. What shelf app do you use, Jeff?
Currently I use Gladys, but I switch between Gladys and Yoink pretty regularly. That's just something that I've always been... that's just always been something I do when it comes to shelf apps. Cause Gladys, the thing I really like about Gladys is that you can kind of specify what file type it is. Like the way that iOS works with shelf apps is that it will take all the information it comes with, and then it will usually pick whatever kind of data that you're putting it from the shelf app into that is most important, and that it doesn't always get it right. Like sometimes I could put a photo in a text editor and it will just take the image name as opposed to the actual photo and embed it. So when it comes to like Gladys, you're able to define of like, this is an image, not text, please use the image. And that's one thing I really like about Gladys is that it allows you to do that. But I enjoy Yoink because I think it has a way better look and feel of it. And I think that the Stacks feature that comes with it is really handy. I'm not sure if Gladys does something like that or not. But the thing I like about Gladys is that it syncs between iOS devices. So if I put something on my iPad iPad into Gladys, it will sync through iCloud, and I can have that information on my phone if I want to use it for later. So it's kind of a universal clipboard that isn't shoddy. You know, it's just it's more useful.
Yeah, my biggest complaint about Gladys, and this is very superficial, is I really don't like the icon, and I don't like the colors of the app. It feels very, like, old school, like, crusty, teachery, like, it just doesn't feel like it belongs on my iPad, where, you know, my iPad is meant to be modern, it's meant to be sleek, it's meant to be built for performance and getting work done, and Gladys just kind of has this look and feel that it kind of drags everything down, and this is probably the designer in me, and I know this is very, very superficial, and I know this is a very, It's not a very fair complaint, so I don't want to shy anybody away from Gladys. I think I have Gladys as well. It's a terrific application. It works fantastic. I'm just not a big fan of the icon, the app name, the look and the feel. That's where I think Yoink does a little bit of a better job. And I want my iPad to feel modern. I want my iPad to feel fast and just be sleek. And I just think with Gladys, that's not quite there. But if you're not somebody that really cares about that, and if you're just kind of rolling your eyes at me, which I completely understand if you are, I definitely do recommend Gladys. I think Gladys is a terrific application.
The icon for Gladys reminds me of CGP Grey's character's mom if she was a librarian.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. I never thought about it that way.
That's how I see it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, shelf apps are great.
Yeah, shelf apps are great. Really spend time with drag and drop. If you're somebody that just doesn't feel like drag and drop is working for you, I recommend checking out a shelf app and use that, and you'll kind of start to see why drag and drop is not just quicker, but it's just better in the long term. Plus it's a lot easier to manipulate multiple files with drag and drop. If I was like in mail and I had attachments and I didn't want to use drag and drop to get everything out of there, I'd have to go into each individual file, use the share sheet to export it. It just makes way more sense to tap on those icons and drag them to, or tap on those files, that is, and drag them where they need to go.
Yeah, when iOS 11 came out, I joined the Yoink beta, and I have to give Yoink a huge commencement, because that is the app that allowed me to sort of figure out where drag and drop was implemented in what apps, and it's a great way to kind of learn where drag and drop is available. Like, if you want to try and save something, whether it's a piece of text or a file or an email or a text message or whatever, just try and use drag and drop into a shelf app and see what kind of pops up, if anything. Mm-hmm. And it will help you kind of learn where drag and drop is implemented and what kind of things you can do with it as well. So that's also a really good tool to use to sort of learn from things that isn't super destructive, where if you're trying to drag an email and only want the attachment to go to like Google Docs or something like that, it can make your document kind of jumbled if it's not done correctly, or if the app doesn't kind of support that. But if you use a shelf app, it's kind of its own little area that you can kind of play around with and delete later if you don't want it, or if it doesn't work the way that you want it to.
Yeah, completely agree. Next up on our list here is tagging and favorites in files. I am a big proponent of using the Files application. I know there are a lot of other options out there, like the Readles document apps and things like that. And some I've heard from some people that they just want to use shelf apps. But for me personally, I think tagging and favorites in the Files app is the best way to navigate around. So there's two sections in the Files app on the left side. There's the favorites area. So what you can do is you can drag a folder into the favorites area and it'll be right there. So you can tap on it. It'll get you into that folder quickly. I have one for video projects, for this podcast, and a couple others that are just really handy to have. Tagging, I talked about in our storage episode a lot too. So I'm just going to briefly touch on it here. Tagging is great for specific things. So I break everything up into projects. So video, podcast, graphics, development, things like that. And when you tag them, you can just, you know, assign a color, assign a tag, and then you can tap on that tag and it'll bring everything up that's associated with that. So if you just want like video assets to be a tag, you can hit that and all of your video assets will come up. So I think it's something that's really, it's really interesting to have. And I think it's really important to kind of organize your stuff the proper way. Now, if you're somebody that just wants to do files and folders, that's fantastic. If that's always worked for you, that's great. Stick with that because that's what works. But I think tagging and favorites are kind of going to be the new way of organizing files and folders.
See, I always forget that favorites is a thing. And that's something I think I need to implement more of, because there are numerous times where I go into the files app, whether it's to pick a file to upload to something or to share with someone or whatever, that I always have to go, I always go immediately back to locations and I select either Dropbox or iCloud or wherever it's saved, and then go through the entire cacophony of files and stuff that I have. And I think that it is like one of five folders that I usually pick regularly. So I think I need to start throwing those folders into favorites and see if that will help with the document picker or just using the file apps in general, because I do use the files app pretty regularly, but I always forget that favorites is a thing. Like I could just pop that up and select the folder that I want and boom, you're in where you need to be and you can kind of find the file that you're looking for. So I think I need to start doing that more. And tagging, you know, we talked about, you know, last episode or in previous episodes, and I still haven't done anything with it. So here's my question, my follow-up question with you is it just general tags that you use, or do you have specific tags for each podcast episode and each video that you're doing as well?
Keep everything as general as possible. You don't want to have to go in and create a tag every time you start a new podcast episode or a new video project or anything. I found for me personally, now, again, everybody's different. So for me, keeping everything as general as possible is good. It's a good way of organizing everything. So the other thing that I want to talk about while we're still talking about the files application is I did a video recently basically talking about the advantages of taking advantages of local storage on your iPad. iPad Pros come up to, you can get them with 512 gigs of storage. That's actually the one I have. And by default, taking advantage of the local storage, it's not really there. There is a local storage section in Files, but you can't really just save anything you want in there. So there's an app called Local Storage, and I did a video on this, so we'll make sure it's in the notes. But basically what it is you download the app, and it creates a folder in the local, on my iPad area, and it's just called Local Storage. It has the icon in there. And then, but the nice thing is it sets file type to anything. So you can save any file type you want in this folder. And what's nice about this is it doesn't sync up to any cloud service. So I've been using this for video projects and stuff like that. So I shoot everything in 4K, and that is really, really big file sizes. So I don't want to run out of cloud storage space because of that. So what I've been doing is I've been saving all my raw footage in this folder, in this local storage folder, and it keeps it completely on device for me. The added bonus of that is with Files and iCloud, what'll happen is once you add something to iCloud, it'll automatically upload, and then it's going to delete it from your device. And there's no way to pin anything, which is really annoying. So if you have a really large file that you've just uploaded, and then now you need to manipulate it with, you have to go in and re-download it again. And then once it's imported into the app, it'll keep it on device until, you know, it's not being used anymore. But still, it's really annoying. So this is a bonus. The app's called Local Storage. It's free. And if you go check out their website, the reason why they made this is all about privacy, and they did a really good job with this app. So I'm really impressed with it. So if you're somebody that has a lot of extra space on your iPad, definitely go check this app out.
Yeah, and I think it's actually useful for people like me too that only has the 64 gig, especially when I'm working on editing, you know, whether it's this podcast or my other podcast getting caught up. Like it's really handy to have that available to select from, and I know that those files are there. And the, you know, you hit the nail on the head with my gripe when it comes to cloud storage and the Files app, is that you have to, when you're done exporting the file, it automatically starts uploading and you can't do anything until it's done uploading. And B, when it is done uploading, it's removed from device, so you have to re-download the thing anyway. And if I'm dealing with, you know, 750 megabyte files at, you know, with my internet that's only 10 megs up and I think 100 megs down, it still takes some time to like re-download everything and everything else. And it can be really annoying if you don't have the ability to sort of just pop it in to a local storage place and not have to worry about it having to be uploaded at that time. And you could move those files or copy the ones that are in your local storage that you want saved into the cloud when they're done being worked on. That's the key here. You can do that. And that's what I'm trying to do more of. So I'm definitely going to check out this app and kind of start playing around with it more and see what I can do with it, because it's a sad fact that you kind of have to find hacks like this in order to deal with files and file storage with your iPad that isn't annoying, I guess, for lack of a better word. So, but I'm happy that they created something like this, and I think anybody that wants to get it should get it. If it's free, you know, what's the worst that could happen? You delete the app and never download it again. Like, you're not going to lose any money out of it. It's free to use, and try it out while you can. And, you know, if the developers ever need some extra cash, I would definitely pay them a couple of bucks a month just to keep that app up and running and working with everything, especially if like they try and do something crazy with iOS 12. Not that I think that they will, but you know, if the developers can continue allowing this kind of tool to be used, it would be really helpful for people like you and I.
Yes, absolutely. I'm gonna do a brief tangent, and I promise this brief tangent is not about pro applications. Developers, they make a terrific apps. The iPad and the iPhone and iOS is great because of third-party developers, because of third-party apps. So, and I'm not saying everyone needs to go out and give a bunch of money to developers, but if you do have an extra couple of bucks and like there's a tip jar and an app that you really like, or if there's like an in-app purchase to, you know, unlock extra icons or something like that, give them money, support them if you have the extra money. I don't, you know, I'm not trying, I don't know everybody's situation or anything like that, but if you do have the extra cash and you can support developers, they make terrific applications. So I like to give, you know, I like it when apps have tip jars and things like that, because then I can just, you know, throw a couple bucks their way, and it just, it makes me feel good because I know I want that app to keep being developed and I want to support a developer.
Yeah, I still have a tip jar with Twitterific, even though I use Tweetbot for the most part. Like, I still pay them like the 50 cents a month or whatever. It's just, you know, I can afford to pay them the 50 cents a month or a dollar a month or whatever and not have to worry too much about it. And that's just how I am financially at this point. Like, I'm not giving them 20 bucks a month for nothing, but like, I am giving them, I'm giving them, you know, an option that they have in their tip jar that is fair. And I think if, you know, if they have like, you know, 10,000 users and they all give them like 50 cents a month, that's $5,000 a month to go towards development. And that will allow the one developer in most cases to have some sort of living that they can continue to build the apps with and deal with, any implementations that change or whatever. And I also pay money for the Bear app, and I use that daily. It's my note-taking app. That's
where I put
all of my things and save them and work with other things with it. And it, you know, and I'm able to pay the $2 or $1.50 a month, I think is what it is. Like, the thing I love about developers like that is they're not asking for an arm and a leg. They're just asking for a couple of bucks to help make ends meet and make their dream and their app be their main source of income. And that's something that I can kind of commend them for. And if I'm able to do it, I will. But, you know, if something were to happen tomorrow and I don't have a job, like, those would be the first things I cut, obviously. But until then, I'm going to continue developing supporting as much as I can. And I think everyone else should too. Like, the one thing I really don't like about a lot of the Apple users and stuff like that is that they get really upset of like, I can't believe I have to pay $5 for an app. I paid $900 for this phone. I'm like, it's two different things, man. Like, you have to kind of understand that, and you have to accept the fact that like, these apps aren't just automatically built out of a machine. Like, people are working their heart and soul on those things. And if you're not willing to pay, you know, whether it's $12 a year for Overcast to get the premium features or $1.50 a month to be able to just sync between one device into another for Bear, like, you know, maybe you should try and find an alternative that isn't as useful and is a little bit more annoying, and then come back to me and see what you think.
Yeah, I think there's definitely premium applications, and you kind of have to pay for the premium applications. It's there's a reason why they're so good, and it's because a lot of people have worked really hard on them. There are definitely free options to pretty much anything we talk about, but they're not, obviously, I don't think they're going to be as good.
No. And I will say that there are some apps out there that are kind of taking advantage of people that are saying support the developers. Like, there was a company that reached out to me to review their app, and I'm not going to say what the app was or what kind of, but the problem I had with them is that they were charging $50 in an in-app purchase in order to get the unlocked features in order to do everything that was necessary.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
The problem was they were marketing it as a free option, but in order to even use it, you had to pay a $10 fee to use it one time, or $50 to be able to use it unlimited times. And that was just insane to me. So there are some people that are taking advantage of trying to get more money out of what they're doing. So do your research if you can about the apps. Like, there are plenty of blogs and plenty of websites, and in the app store has built-in reviews as well to kind of give you an indication of where these apps stand. Like, if there's anything that has like 2 stars or below, unless there's some big controversy over it,
IA writer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, just do your research and use your hard-earned money to support developers, but really make sure that it's something that you want to do, and it's an app that you'll enjoy before you kind of pull the trigger on that as well, because there are some people that aren't working great on their apps and expecting a ton of money because of it. Yeah, so I don't know about you, Chris, but I use text replacement a lot. I don't know if you use the built-in iOS text replacement or even something like Text Expander on iOS.
So I've actually never used Text Expander. I had an application on the Mac that I used that was very much like Text Expander, but it wasn't as robust. It was simplified. I don't have too much use for text replacement, but there are a few things that I've been kind of moving towards. So like, if you look at my YouTube videos and stuff like that, the descriptions all have the same sign off. I have some email stuff for my day job that has some like default replies and things like that. And what I've been doing with those is, instead of using an app, I've been going into text replacement and settings in the keyboard area. And what's great about this is you can assign a keyboard shortcut to it. So like, my YouTube sign off one is / YouTube sign, and then what that'll do is it'll automatically fill in my YouTube sign off. And then I have some email ones that are like, I think they're like A1, A2, A3, and like it'll automatically fill those in for me, and it'll replace everything, and it'll do that. Now, the text replacement feature that's built in to settings is not meant to be for paragraphs of text. It is not, I'm kind of pushing its limits, I think, and it breaks for me a few times. It's really meant for like, hey, I commonly misspell this word, so please fix it for me. Or, hey, I use this term that's not really an English word or whatever, you know, whatever language you speak word, but I want it to be spelled out this way. Or if I, you know, use like BRB, it'll fill in for be right back or something.
Or just tell them, I never want to use the word ducking.
Yes. Okay, I have that one. It's ducking ridiculous. It's ducking ridiculous. So yeah, it's there. So that it's there to work with it. Jeff, do you use that for anything? Or
yeah, I use it for small bits of text. Like I use it a lot for my email. Like instead of having it be contact@tablethabit.com, I just do /CT, and that just sort of does it for me. I use a lot of my shortcuts that start with a semicolon just because it's super handy, and that's what Text Expander kind of taught me to use when I started using Text Expander. I'm kind of the weird ones where I started using Text Expander before the built-in text replacement that iOS has. The one thing I don't enjoy about using Text Expander, but I still have on my iPhone especially, is that when I do need to use big blocks of text, like I have a few email text snippets that I use pretty often when it comes to like common things that I'm talking to somebody about. I will use that text expander to send that big paragraph or input that big paragraph. But for the most part, I still use the built-in text replacement just because it's built in. And with text expander, you have to use a special keyboard that brings up those snippets. And that's the thing I wish it wasn't so, but I can understand where Apple's coming from, where if you have a built-in keyboard and you offer that kind of thing where it can be implemented as a text replacement, you have to use that specific keyboard instead of, you know, accidentally using it as a built-in text replacement kind of thing. So you have to make that conscious choice of like, I am using this for a text snippet. This is what I'm doing with it and that kind of thing. It just sort of allows you to not make any mistakes when it comes to inputting text and writing things out. So yeah, I use text replacement. I don't use it as much as I would like to. One thing that I really enjoy was, I think Federico Fatici mentioned it in like a podcast or on Maxter or something like that, but like, if you use the old school emoticon smileys, like the colon hyphen closed parentheses to do a smiley face, I have that as a text replacement to use the smiley face emoji. So that's one thing I really like doing, because then if I'm like using my Apple Watch or something like that, I don't have to scroll through all the emojis. I can just type it in with the quick scribble, whatever it's called, where you can just input the text and send it, and it would automatically send it as the text replacement as well, because I think it syncs through iCloud, so it will work the way that I want it to.
Yeah, I completely agree. I wish Text Expander had the ability to use like system-wide keyboard shortcuts or something like it does on the Mac. It would make that application a bajillion times more useful to me, but I understand where they're coming from. Hopefully one day it's there, but you never know. So the next one we're going to kind of talk about, and you know, actually I want to throw something in here really quick. We talked about when we were talking about Type to Siri accessibility. Just go through the accessibility features and check some stuff out. There's a lot of really good stuff in there. I used Reduce Motion for a very, very long time because I don't like all the animation stuff. It's not that I got motion sickness from it, because that's why it's there. It's for people that get motion sickness. But I just never really cared for all the extra animations and swoops and stuff. But with the iPhone X, with it being OLED, the Reduce Motion stuff really helps prevent burn-in. So Now it's all on, but look through accessibility and see what's there. I think it's a good kind of area to kind of check out. You'll be surprised. I'm sure you'll find something that you'll want to use, whether you need it or not. It's there, so take advantage of it.
Yeah, one thing I really like about accessibility is that there's an option that is kind of hard to find, but you can, if you look for it, you can find it, where you can reduce the white point, I think, or something like that. I think that's what it's called. I'm trying to find it.
Well, you know about searching and settings, right?
Yeah, no, I know about that. It's just I'm trying to find the specific way to do it, because I don't know if it's actually called reduced to white point.
So for those that don't know, when you go into settings, if you pull down on the left column, there's a search bar, and you can just type in anything that you're looking for. So it does make it a little difficult when you don't know exactly what it's called. But if you're looking for like keyboard features, you can pull down on the left side and type in keyboard. That was something that I think was added in iOS. I don't remember. iOS, I don't remember. That's the one it came out in. But yeah, that was a really handy feature when it came out. I really enjoy that. I forgot it was there for a really long time, and then I accidentally did it, and I was like, oh, I should be using this.
Yeah. So I did find that it is reduced white point, and okay. It's a setting in accessibility where you could turn it on, and if you triple click the home button, it will reduce the white point, which makes it super dark, which is great when you're using it for something like reading at night or whatever. Like, it will make it way less obtrusive, especially if you have someone that shares a bed with you and they don't like the light. You can still read it in the dark, but it's not super dark, or it's not super bright. So after accessibility and stuff, one last thing that I have is to learn workflow. Workflow is my bread and butter when it comes to iOS automation or doing things that would require many, many more steps than the tap of a button that workflow kind of allows you to do. We've talked about workflow a lot, but for those of you who don't know, it was this automation app that was built by a couple of indie developers, which was then bought by Apple, I think almost a year ago now, if not more.
Yeah, a little over a year.
And so it's just this app that has a whole bunch of hooks and things that you can get your hands on and allow you to implement automation and do things that are crazy wild. And I have actually started doing this weekly post called Workflow Wednesdays, where every Wednesday I will share a workflow that either I created or I found elsewhere that I will source when I find them, and share them with people of like things that you can do with them. So one thing I used was how to upload your blog post to WordPress, or how to remove metadata on your photos, or, you know, something that is, that sounds complicated, but allows you to, is super easy to do when using workflow. So, I mean, we don't have to make this a workflow episode, Chris, but I mean, is there anything that you think that people wanting to use workflow more or even get better at it with workflow, what are some things that they can learn?
So first off, I do want to stress Jeff's Workflow Wednesday series is really good. Everybody should go check it out. I'll make sure we put a link in the show notes, but it's very good. So everybody should go check that out.
Thank you.
As far as workflows go, I recommend everybody just find workflows. So the great thing about in the workflow app, there's a directory of just like already pre-built workflows that people have submitted. I recommend just grabbing some stuff that's in there that interests you and start modifying it. That's the best place to start.
Yeah.
And then you can get into things like X callback URLs and APIs. I've done a couple videos on like the basics of workflow. So we can put that in the show notes as well too. Mm-hmm. And that'll kind of get your feet wet. And that's really what you want. You want to get your feet wet. And then once you get your feet wet, you're going to realize this stuff is actually pretty easy. And it's going to be really cool from there. I think workflow is one of the coolest applications that's ever been on iOS.
Yeah. And it's nice that they're still updating pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. That was one thing that I and many, many other people were really worried about, was if this is going to be the kind of thing where a big company will buy the app just so they can have the developers work on whatever they want them to work on and kind of sunset that app. But it looks like Apple is allowing the team to either do it independently, or even Apple is still allowing them to work on it full time or whatever. Regardless, it's still getting updates and changes stuff, especially with new OS updates and things like that, where the application is still being updated and refreshed and continuing to get support, which is a very refreshing and exciting thing for Apple to allow to happen. It was something that was very worrisome for quite some time, and I'm happy that they're still allowing it to happen. I also have a link on my website of a bunch of lists of like other places that you can go to get the basics and advanced workflow stuff. Like,
oh, cool.
Chris, your video is in that list. Canvas is another great iPad podcast, and they have a whole series of stuff that they did with workflow that I think is superb. There are a bunch of other places about blog posts and things like that. So I'll have a link to that as well in the show notes. And like I said, Chris, your videos are in there as well. So if people want to watch more of Chris's stuff, which I suggest that you do, you can find links to it there as well. So Chris, are there any other things that you kind of want to talk about with this? Because like I said, that was my last one on my list. So what about you?
Just some other automation tools. Zapier. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce that. I've heard it both ways. It's a great web automation tool. It allows you to hook into APIs of other services like Todoist and things like that. I personally don't really use it. Everything that I need, I can pretty much do through workflow or the next one, which is IFTTT, which is like Zapier, but not as complex, but it's also free.
What does IFTTT stand for?
If this, then that. So what'll happen is you can set up automated triggers. So we have the best example I can think of right now is we have a hashtag for the show. It's hashtag a slab of glass. If you tweet at that using that hashtag, it IFTTT looks for that hashtag. Then once it sees something with that hashtag, it takes that tweet and then puts it in a Google Sheet document so I can go in and look at it later. It's pretty cool. It's pretty handy to have. I think it's a really, it was kind of the first automation tool I played it with. It's been around forever, like since I was at least in high school. It's been around a very long time. So it was one of the first things I started playing with, and I've always kind of used that, and it's always met my needs. I really do want to get into Zapier one day. I just haven't had time to do it. And IFTTT right now is meeting all my web-based automation needs, but I'm kind of pushing up against that limit to where it's not so much anymore, and that I think I need to start looking into Zapier.
Yeah. Yeah. And the nice thing about Zapier is that that differentiates itself from IFTTT is that with IFTTT, it's just has what the acronym stands for. If this, then that. And that's basically full stop. That's it. End of story. You can only have like one action. But with Zapier, you could have it do a plethora of things in all one action. So like if you, to kind of piggyback off of the hashtag is the love of glass explanation that you had, if you wanted it to save it to a document in Sheets and notify you in like a push notification or a text or something like that, like there's a new person that just used hashtag a slab of glass, like it can do that, and it could do a bunch of other things in a step-by-step process. So it's if this, then that, then this, then that, then this, then that kind of thing. It just it can kind of build off of each other, and it can get really complex and really, really powerful if you allow it to. So I think Zapier is one of those things that I am going to try within the year if I can. It does offer a paid subscription where you can have more actions, I think that they're called, or something like that. Like with the free tier, you can only have like five. And I think they set a limit of how many things can happen within each action or something like that. So you have to give them a little bit of money if you want to do the more powerful and complex things. But it's definitely worth looking into if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely. The one last thing I want to throw in is Drafts 5, at the time of recording, has just come out. You wrote something about it, and I did a video on it. And Drafts is like the Swiss Army knife of text. It's automation for text. It's absolutely insane. You can build custom actions using JavaScript and all sorts of really cool tools in there. So we'll link some stuff in the description. I don't think we have time to kind of get into it too much, but basically if you're doing anything with a lot of text, if you're a writer or a blogger or you do a lot of email or whatever, anything that could be done with a lot of text and that you have steps to it, like you need to add stuff to it or you need to run it through an application or a service, I definitely recommend checking out Drafts 5. It is an insane tool. And the nice thing is it's free to download now. There is a subscription model if you want some of the more pro features, which kind of goes back to what we were talking about, supporting developers. I think Drafts 5 is one of those apps that it's constantly kept up to date. It's constantly just, it's being worked on. It's a good, solid application by a good company. So I definitely recommend checking out that one as well.
Yeah, Greg Pierce, who develops it, is a really active member in the iOS community, and he's always open to suggestions and things like that. And I think that he really listened to a lot of people that were using Drafts 4 when making mm-hmm. this one, because, you know, aside from your video and my blog post, Tim Nahumek is a really, really good blogger who wrote a tremendous review on Drafts 5 and a ton of other things that you can kind of do with it. It's really extensive. I think it's like 13,000 words or something like that. It's super long. Yeah, it's
pretty big.
I'm still trying to go through it and read it bit by bit. It's really, really good. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. But like Drafts 5 was one of those apps that recently became part of my arsenal. Like I had Drafts 4. I used it a little bit. I never really understood the power that this app had until I started using Drafts 5 in the beta. And it's now not only made it to my home screen, it's in the center of my dock. It's the number one app that I will probably use from now until, you know, whatever, because now it has so many awesome hooks into it where I can input tasks and send it right to things or wherever I want it to go. I can I do all of my drafts of my blog posts on it now, and I can send it to wherever I want it to go. And it has really good features to kind of allow for Markdown support and quick access to Markdown tools. And it has a great directory of things that you can pretty much find any automation that you can do with it to send that text elsewhere or conform that text into something. Like, there's one really good one I saw the other day where it will conform the text from Markdown into rich text and copy it to your clipboard so that you can put it into mail as rich text if you write it in Markdown.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Super nice. Super, super nice. Yeah. So check out the app. Check out the review by Tim Nahumick, my post and Chris's video as well. Drafts 5 is going to be something that I think we're going to continue to talk about for quite a while.
Yeah, I agree. So, Jeff, I think that kind of about does it for today. I think we kind of gave a lot of tips. I know a lot of things were all over the place. If you guys have any tips or anything that you use every single day, for, you know, to get work done on the iPad, let us know. You can find me on Twitter at Chris_Lawley. You can find my video stuff on YouTube. It's the Untitled Site, but the easiest way to find all that stuff is just go to theuntitledsite.com. What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, you can find me over at tablethabit.com and on Twitter at I am Jeff Perry. And, you know, if you want to be part of the conversation, you know, Chris kind of explained that we have a hashtag a slab of glass. If you have any recommendations for us that we might have missed or tools that we might have missed in these, in this list that we've made, let us know using that hashtag a slab of glass on Twitter, or you can email us at aslabofglass@gmail.com and you can get a hold of us that way as well. If email is your preferred method, or if you're not on Twitter for, you know, whatever reason. So there's ways you can get a hold of us and everything else. And we just wanted to say thank you for listening very much. We really appreciate it. If you could help us out in any way, just tell your friend about the show or give us a like or a review, wherever podcast app allows you to do. It helps out the show. It means a lot to us. We really appreciate it if you do that. You know, until then though, you can find us over at aslabofglass.com and everywhere else. We have links in the show notes to everything that was talked about today, and we hope to see you again in 2 weeks.